Your New York weekend is not complete without the Joan Hamburg Show on 77 WABC.
You're listening to the best of the Joan Hamburg Show. But before we get started, I want to share with you a conversation I had earlier on with my daughter, Elizabeth. I just wanted all of you to know this time of year, Yom Kippur, a very holy day for members of our audience who are Jewish. It's a time for reflection. It's a time to look ahead, and it's a time to make a difference. And when we talk about making a difference, we all know the awful calamity that has been taking place right in our own backyard, in Puerto Rico, in many of the Caribbean islands. And my daughter, Elizabeth, who is an entrepreneur, a business person, who has often traveled the world, called me recently about a project that she and a couple of people you may know have embarked upon to bring much-needed aid to the Puerto Rican community. And Liz, welcome. And you pointed out that so many Americans don't even know that Puerto Ricans are American citizens.
That's right. Good morning, Mom. Thank you so much for letting me share the story because, yeah, you and I have traveled to Puerto Rico. I still have memories of being stuck in the airport ourselves there, but it has been just an incredible situation down there. And I was really quite surprised to read recently that almost 50% of Americans who were surveyed didn't even know that Puerto Ricans are American citizens. It is a U.S. territory, and it is an island, so very, very difficult to get things, material off and on. But I decided finally I couldn't just sit idly by. My friends and I were talking, and we were saying, what can we do? What can we do? And you and I know, too, we had our own home destroyed by Sandy many years ago, and we're in the dark just for a very short period of time, and we know how completely unsettling it is. So I really decided I needed to take action. And I was talking to a friend of mine, a wonderful entrepreneur who brings solar paneled lights to Africa and to emerging markets. And kind of light bulb went off in my own head to say, well, we bring these solar lights to emerging markets and to other disaster zones around the world. Why can't we bring them right into our own backyard?
So
that's
you
how
did.
It all started. Yep. And there's a terrific organization called Studio Unite and Third Wave Volunteers. And they have been bringing these lights. They're really incredible, very lightweight solar lights. They're called solar puffs. And they were designed really for disaster zones. And she's brought over 20,000 of these lights to everything from the earthquake in Nepal to Haiti several years ago, to Syrian refugees living in refugee camps in Greece. So we got in touch with Allison and her team, and they rerouted we've got up to, well, literally thousands right now. We've got up to 7,000, but we're looking to see if we can get more because there's been a huge outpouring. And we had a wonderful friend named George who has volunteered to personally fly them down. He's got a plane, and he said, come on, let's load it up with as many as we can get. Let's bring some volunteers down, and let's get them on the ground as quickly as we can. So that's what we're doing. We started a crowdfunding campaign together with John Leguizamo, who, as you know, has been very actively involved in the community and is actually just starring in a new Broadway show. And film director Doug Liman, whose movie is about to come out.
Right, American Made.
Busy with all of that, but they both kind of jumped in and said, let's shine a light on this issue and let's shine a light on Puerto Rico. So we launched a crowdfunding campaign earlier this week. In less than 24 hours, we've raised $25,000. Our original goal was to raise $12,000, and we're going from there. And the messages, you know, if you go onto the CrowdRise campaign, the crowdfunding campaign page, which is just, you can get to it through solar4PR.com, solar4PR.com.
And Liz, how long do these lights last?
Well, you know, they take a solar charge during the day, so you put them out in the sunlight during the day, and then they last the whole night. So anywhere from, you know, like 8 hours up to 12 hours, depending on if they're high or low power. There's two different lights. You can put it on a low power, high power. And it's just, you know, we've gotten just so many beautiful, beautiful messages from people saying, in memory of different people, saying they want to shine a light, beautiful messages in Spanish. For my people, dark nights ahead, may I bring you a little light. And so many messages from people who've said, you know, I'm out of a job, or I can only contribute $10 or $25, but I want to help. And each of these lights, the total cost, including the cost of shipping them, distributing them, and getting them over there, is about $13.
So it's really, it's very important.
$13, you can give a whole family light. We've had many people donate $130, which will give 10 lights. We've had people donate thousands of dollars. So it really is everything, a whole range. People are just jumping right in. It's been unbelievable to see what social media, the power of social media.
Right.
I posted just on my own Facebook and Twitter page, and within 2 hours, we had hundreds and hundreds of people already donating and then spreading the word from
there.
And
of course, all you have to do is keep the light out in the sunshine, and it recharges. So it's basically a very simple premise. Just one quick thought. Half the problem in Puerto Rico so far is, even though big ships have arrived with groceries and supplies, they haven't been able to get it to anyone. Now, is that an issue for all these lights, or does your team know how to get them to
That's
the people?
Right. Well, our team is working on the ground. Again, they've done this kind of work in other disaster recovery zones, so they've got great contacts on the ground, and they're working through that right now. We're talking to folks who are in touch with people at the airport and figuring out exactly when that will open up and when we can fly down. But our plan right now is to have someone fly down next weekend, so around the 6th or 7th of October, and hit the ground running. So yeah, logistics are definitely going to be an issue, but that's why we partnered with this team that deals
knows
with this
how to do
contacts
it.
On the ground. It's called Studio Unite. And, you know, this is literally a drop in the bucket in the ocean. We're talking about, you know, 4,000 to 7,000, 10,000 lamps, something like that. There's 3.5 million people in Puerto Rico. Mm. So we're doing our part. But it's a very, very long road ahead.
It is. And tell again how people can make a contribution.
So it's solar4pr, solar4pr.org or .com, solar4pr.org. And you can go right on it. We'll take you right to the crowdfunding campaign. Please spread the word. You can spread the word on social media. You can tweet it out, solar4pr.org.
And what a difference it can make.
We really are letting people know that we want to shine the light on Puerto Rico. They are part of us. We are all American citizens, and we don't want them to be forgotten. And we heard a story, remember, Mom, I shared with you a couple of weeks ago before Maria hit, where I had a friend stuck on one of the U.S. Virgin Islands, and he literally, by the sheer generosity and grace of someone in Puerto Rico who had a boat, just picked up a stranger and brought him to Puerto Rico, and they housed him and were incredibly hospitable. So now it's our turn to
give back
the favor.
Thank you, Liz. Good work. Elizabeth Hamburg, John Leguizamo, Doug Lyman, and many other people giving light where there is absolutely none. We'll talk soon.
New York culture with real New Yorkers. Joan Hamburg, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
You all know Linda Stacy because she writes one of the best columns in our town. She writes for the New York Daily News. And for many years, you've seen her on News One. Linda does a ton of things. In addition, she started writing fiction. Other books, but fiction. And she has a brand new book. She has a character who's been very busy, a reporter who's very much like Linda. And this reporter, well, I'm going to let Linda tell you, gets involved in a new thriller called Book of Judas. And the subtitle, will the discovery of the missing pages of an ancient book mean the end of the world? Well, we're not going to tell you anything, except that Linda says to us throughout this romp through history and through a single mother's life that Judas was not the betrayer of Jesus. He was actually a friend. He was a loving friend. But when you describe, Linda, how you even got to this, it was really weird.
It's, you know, people have asked me, where do your ideas come from? And it's not that, at the risk of sounding crazy, my ideas are sort of fed to me. And this one was fed to me very strangely. I was sitting in my home in Atlantic Beach, New York. We had a place there. And we owned the house for 12 years. And I had just finished writing The Sixth Station. I was so glad to never write another book again. And I'm sitting on the couch and I look up. And there on the bookshelf is a book called I, Judas by Taylor Caldwell and Jess Stern. And I thought, the heck is that?
Yeah,
I've lived here for 12 years. How do I? So I asked everybody in my family. Nobody had brought it there. And I take the book, and it was written in the 1970s. And I started reading it. It was fiction. I thought it was very interesting. And then a few days later, 3-4 days later, my daughter and I went on a girls' weekend to Princeton, New Jersey. And because she's a smarty pants, we, instead of just staying around and getting spa treatments all day.
Right, enjoying yourself.
What I like to do, she insisted we go to the Princeton bookstore. So I went to the Princeton bookstore with her, and there on the front counter is a book called Gospel of Judas, interpreted by Elaine Pagels. I thought, what? That's two Judases in 3 days. So I start reading, and it turns out that there was a Gospel of Judas. It was uncovered again in the 1970s, lost and found on the black market. And I'm reading. It's very interesting. Then it says it was found rotted in a safety deposit box in Hicksville, Long Island.
Well, weird.
Damn,
right?
I grew up in Hicksville, Long Island. Then I'm reading further, and it says in the Citibank on Broadway in Hicksville, Long Island.
Which was your bank.
That was my bank. That was my bank
it's
when I was a kid, and my parents' bank when they, you know, there's their bank. It was like, you know, to paraphrase Casablanca, of all the banks in the world,
right.
You should rot in mine.
This one, unbelievable.
Yeah, crazy.
And that decided.
I mean, at that point, I said, are you kidding? Yeah, you got to do it again. Here you go again. And I had to then research what the heck this was all about and why I was getting fed all these messages.
It was and it definitely was a message.
Yes.
And, you know, I have a thing. I love to read, but I also, when I talk to writers, I don't want to tell you the whole story because it ruins it.
Yes.
And especially the end. But Alexandra Russo, who is Linda in fiction, a version, it's her good friend, a guy. He's a fireman. He's a gay Jewish fireman. Only Linda could invent the gay Jewish fireman. But to add insult to injury, this guy inherits a manuscript that is in a locked tube. I'm not going to tell you too much more than that. But it could have been, according to Roy, this character, missing pages from the Gospel of Judas, but pages that reveal secrets that no one could possibly know and that could lead to eternal life. It's all part of this. But when Linda's character, Alexandra, gets involved in this, her child is threatened. Her whole world starts tumbling apart. And she goes on one of her journeys as a reporter, even goes to Israel, goes to the ends to try to figure out what this is about. And I was just saying to Linda, there was a recent discovery about something ancient in an ancient church that had been there forever and no one paid attention. So again, all these signs are pointing to the book of Judas, who could have been a good guy.
Well, here's, you know, as I was researching, one of the things, the actual Gospel of Judas was put back together by National Geographic, and it was in a bazillion pieces, and they pieced together what they could, and parts of it are missing. But what I realized, and none of the scholars mentioned this, all the accepted Bibles, I mean, all the accepted Gospels are retelling of what happened. Jesus went here, he said this, he did this, he made this miracle. This one is none of that. This is allegedly the true words that Jesus spoke to Judas, and it's all about spirituality. He's giving him secrets of the universe.
That's true, though.
Yes, that's all true. The truth. He's actually telling him where he comes from. And he's actually telling him to betray him. Because without the betrayal and the crucifixion, there could have been no resurrection. But here's where it gets really funny. Think about this. Jesus was the most popular guy in Jerusalem. I mean, he was it. He rode in town on two donkeys. He had just had dinner with Lazarus, who he raised from the dead. This woman was there, and she used thousands of dollars worth of oil to massage his feet with her hair. He was like a superstar.
He was a god.
So, and he also never made a secret of where he was, because he was getting all the crowds and the publicity. He told everybody where he was having what turned out to be the Last Supper. Everyone knew that he would go and pray in the Garden of Gethsemane after that. It was no secret. So the idea that Judas would have to tell the Pharisees, which is like, it's like somebody saying to the cops, you know, Elvis is staying in this motel.
Exactly.
I mean, everybody knew. So it's kind of crazy. And he was the only one, I believe, except for John, that went to the crucifixion. All the others ran away and hid.
Can you blame them?
Yeah. No, but I mean, I think he was the treasurer of Jesus's all the disciples. If he wanted money, he would have just stolen the treasure.
Exactly. Could have.
And the 30 pieces of silver, interestingly, he would never have sold out for 30 pieces of silver, because that was a disgraceful amount. That was the amount for the cheapest slave in all of Jerusalem.
Mm. And you found all that out?
Yes. Yes.
Researching.
Yes. And, you know, as they say, history is written by the victors, and the gospels that were chosen by Constantine to be in the Bible are the guys who survived.
When you embarked on this and started doing this research, which revealed all of this, did you know where this was going to take you?
No, I had no idea. So what I did know after a bit is that I had to go to Israel.
So you really went.
I really went. I don't believe, I'm not one of those authors and I envy those people who can just make up.
Right, sit in a room.
I have to actually go to a place.
Well,
I have to see what it smells like. I have to see what it feels like to walk there. I have to hear the noise.
To worry about getting through security.
Right. So my husband, Sid Davidoff, has a distant relative that I contacted in Israel, and I knew that he was an artist and a mystic. What I didn't know was what would happen. So I drove way out into the desert.
All true. This is all Linda's real story. Absolutely true.
Drove out into the desert to their house, which is a beautiful glass house by itself in the desert of Israel. And the second I walked in, the lights went out. The second I walked into this mystic artist's house. So we have candles. And then he said to me, oh, let me show you the basement. And I thought, is he going to kill me?
You didn't know him.
No,
he was just distant husband relative.
So I thought, okay, I'm going to be killed in the basement. Well, it was similar, because under his house is a 3,000-year-old burial tomb that uncovered like 10 years ago.
He knew, but he was involved in all this.
It was a dig, and it led into the bottom underneath his house.
Oh,
so we climbed
Lord.
Down the stairs, and they were in a 3,000-year-old burial tomb, which, I mean, truly you can't make this up,
which
factors in heavily in my book. It wasn't made up. I mean, I was there. So we go through all this. The second I walked out of the house, the lights went back on.
That's unbelievable.
Yep.
And you are sort of, this is nothing you would believe could happen.
It's not something I would have ever thought to even write about. Mm. Because I didn't even know that, who knew that? And I said to him, I said, you have a tomb under your house? He said, oh, it's Israel. You know, you find all kinds of things.
Well, the truth is, drive along the road and there's something.
I know. I was sitting outside.
Did your husband come with you?
No, I went by myself.
So you were the only relative.
Right. So I outside. I'm looking, like, you pick up things. There's like ancient coins and stuff on the ground. You know, it's like, what?
Everywhere. Everywhere.
It's crazy.
And I remember I did something. I picked up a tile or a stone walking somewhere. And the person I was with was an archaeologist. She almost fainted. Put that back. You know, that's thousands of years of whatever. I said, I always collect stones from where. She said, you're not collecting that.
The same thing happened to me, but nobody stopped me. Oh, it had like I picked it up near his house, and I said, I asked him, what is it? Can I have it? He said, oh, just take it. It was a kind of like an oval stone with like a raised
thing in
cross
it.
Kind of thing on it.
Oh, did you send him the book of Judas?
No, I haven't sent it yet because I just got them.
Oh, this is exciting. Linda Stacy with her brand new book. Linda, whose column is incredibly popular in the Daily News, the Book of Judas. And you are going to go along with Alexandra Russo, who is a New York City reporter, a single mom, has had a wonderful, what she thought was a wonderful couple of turns with a guy who got killed. And we're not going to tell you much more about him, but she is totally convinced he's the father of her child, even though there are others who feel they're the father of the child.
The Sixth Station, the first book in the Alessandra Russo series, finishes with him being killed. This Yusef Pantera.
Yeah.
And the reason that she thinks it could, the reason that her ex-husband thinks it could be him is they had one night tryst when they had too many margaritas and they reconciled, realized it was no good. And then she goes to France on this expedition to find something, to find this other treasure. And that's why he claims it's his child, but it's actually
someone else's child.
Yes.
So all of this is part of this excitement and part of history and part of the gospel of Judas. You're going to see Judas in a way that you never thought about him before.
I never thought about him before like that as anything but the guy from the Renaissance paintings who looks like a devil.
Exactly.
The worst person that's ever lived.
Well, that's
but
what
when
we
you,
thought.
When you really think about it, how could you give away the whereabouts of the most popular man who everybody was following around anyway?
No,
it's crazy.
That's right. And you didn't know that Jesus was like a frat boy in those days. They worshiped
this
guy. He was most congenial.
Yes.
Of
anyone. He was wildly popular. And he knew how to get the publicity. I mean, there are accounts that he actually came in riding two donkeys at once. It's crazy, but you know
that guy was very limber.
Well, that's because they also think he was a yogi, that he had spent time in India studying Buddhism.
I mean, but you know, these were all real people.
Yes,
you know, and it makes you know it's so interesting once you do research. I was in Turkey a while ago in a little town that friends who were in the spice business had taken us to, lived in Turkey. And they said, oh, you'll be interested. It's a beautiful little chapel. No one goes here. And there was a mural of Mary. And it was a different thing. I'd never seen anything like that. And there was a very elderly lady in this little chapel. And she said to us, you know, the mother of Jesus really had a rough time. Mm-hmm. And she did not say in English, it was in Turkish. And her version was that she was really a bad girl and she had a lot of relationships and got herself pregnant.
Yeah.
And her father, the carpenter, threw her out. You know, he said, this is a disgrace. You better go somewhere else and have your baby. So that, and this lady believed that with her whole heart.
Well, interestingly, the character, first of all, signs everywhere, a sign. The Sixth Station, my first book, started in Turkey in the House of Mary when I started having visions of all kinds of crazy things that I had to research. Secondly, the love interest of Alessandro Russo, the man she fell madly in love with, Yusef Pantera. Yusef is Joseph, and Pantera exactly. is the name of the, it means the panther, and it is the name of the Roman soldier that was allegedly Mary, the man that impregnated Mary.
That's our Linda Stacy. Book of Judas, her latest, an ancient book. What does it mean if they can really unlock the secrets, even unlock the tube that they find it in? Is it the end of the world? Is it longevity, or is it forever life for anyone? You've got to read it. It's a wonderful read.
Oh, thank you.
I'm Joan Hamburg, and you're listening to WABC.
Backstage with Broadway's Best. Behind the Curtain with Joan Hamburg on 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
And, of course, speaking of Broadway's Best, that leads me right to Patti LuPone. Why not, Patti? Hello there.
How are you?
I'm good, and I know you're good. Patti is starring in War Paint, and she plays one of the great cosmetic queens, Helena Rubinstein, and does a brilliant job. Are you having a good time?
I'm having a blast.
I was really excited. You know, hard enough to get great jobs on Broadway with juicy parts. And here's a play that has two wonderful women's parts.
Yes, exactly. And the lives of these two women, Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden, is so extraordinary. And what they accomplished at that time in history is unparalleled. I mean, and this, the musical is by, the music is by Scott Frankel, lyrics by Michael Corey, book by Doug Wright, directed by Michael Greif. So it has a lot of heart. It has a lot of information. And Christine is brilliant as
Christine Ebersole.
Oh, yeah. God, she's brilliant as Elizabeth. We are very simpatico on stage. Audiences love it. And I'm very lucky to be in this musical at this time in my life.
You know, no, it's more than luck. You've got talent, and no matter what you
do,
and you know it.
Well,
and that,
I do, but
you know, you are the ultimate survivor. I'm telling you, coming through Juilliard when you did, when it was mean
yeah.
and tough, and you survived it, is a yeah. great beginning for the rejection of the life of an actress.
Well, you're so right. And they basically told us that what we went through at school would be mimicked in the outside world. And actually, it was never as tough as it was in Juilliard.
No, but you know, it's because you guys were the first.
We were.
They didn't have a drama division. Then and in comes Patti, and she graduated from the very first class.
Yeah.
And then went on to be one of the beginning members, a founding member of the acting company. So,
Joan, do you want to hear something really
tell
scary?
Tell me.
The drama department of the Juilliard School will be 50 years old next year. I
oh
am
my gosh.
Freaking
and
out.
And you were a toddler. That's why it was so hard.
And, you know, in the, I will run into students from Juilliard and I'll say, what class? And they'll say 35, 48, 6, whatever. And it's just shocking. But time flies. Time flies. And, you know, that all of my training at Juilliard has paid off tenfold in all of the different fields and styles of, you know, production, styles of plays, and television or film or stage, has all paid off. They kept saying, you know, they would teach us technique and then we were to forget it. Well, the technique reveals itself in every production. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, 50 years later.
You're still.
Yeah. Still.
But, you know, right after Juilliard, I mean, and you did, you went on, you traveled, you did everything, but it really started happening. When I was thinking of all the roles that you've played and all the awards, it's hard to look at one and say, gee, I love this. I mean, I still think of you as Mama Rose in Gypsy, but
oh, thank you.
There were so many other brilliant ones.
Thank you. Well,
and this one is a lot of fun, too.
Oh, this is great. She was a fascinating character. You know, I think both Elizabeth and Helena achieved what they achieved, first and foremost, through survival. Both of them came from poverty. Both were immigrants to America. That's key. Both were immigrants to America. One from Canada and one from Krakow, Poland.
Right.
And they had enough ingenuity and enough chutzpah to figure out how they could survive
thrived. They were at different times in their lives the richest women in America.
Hard to believe.
And they were CEOs, creators, founders, creators, and CEOs of their own companies. Nobody told
That's
them
right.
what to do.
It was no one ever heard of that.
It's extraordinary because I can't think of a woman today that has that kind of power or has achieved that kind of success as those two women did at the turn of the century through the 60s.
That's exactly right. And they were with men who in the end try to do them in out of their own greed and weakness.
Yeah, well, Charles Revson was the one that actually beat them at their own
game.
That
was so interesting, yeah,
their,
that character.
Their Greek tragedy, their major flaw was that they would not move with the times, they would not advertise on TV, and they would not lower themselves to cheapen their brand. They both of them felt that their clientele was high class and should stay that way, and so they didn't move with the times. Elizabeth was bankrupt when she died. Helena was very shrewd with money, and her Helena Foundation, Helena Rubinstein Foundation, is still paying down. And, you know, people ask me, did my mother use it? The only thing I can remember my mother using was Avon, because we lived on Long Island when it was still country. And the Avon lady came. But
yeah,
I remember Helena
That's
Rubinstein
exactly
from,
right.
I remember Helena Rubinstein from the Helena Rubinstein PBS, brought to you by the Helena Rubinstein Foundation.
Unreal.
Yeah.
You know, but those were the days when not only did Avon come to your house, so did the Fuller Brush Man. Do you remember that?
Yes, I was going to just say that.
You know, the guy who sharpened knives drove his truck.
Oh, God.
The tablecloth man, another refugee, because everyone used tablecloths and linen napkins. You know, that was like you brought that from the other world.
Yeah.
So, and then, of course, here we have Patti LuPone starring in this amazing show called War Paint, having a great time. Before I forget, tell me about the son, the actor's son.
Oh, my son Joshua, he's great. He's actually right now playing on five different softball leagues, or teams rather, in Central Park. I mean, it's his passion in the summertime to play softball in Central Park. And he's, you know, he went out to California, and I think he'll eventually end up in California because he was born there. He's a Los Angelino.
I know,
He's great, though. Thank you for asking. He's still, you know, still with it, and it's a different business than it was when I was a kid. You know, with Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and reality TV, it's tougher, much tougher.
Well, it is, but you know what? As one of my kids always said, going into the movie business, and we were like, oh, please, you know, do anything else. And his answer was, someone's going to make it. Why not me?
Oh, good
and,
for him.
You know, and that's like your son.
Right.
How
yeah.
could he be anything else watching his mom?
Well, he grew up in the dressing room. Do you know what I mean? He has the best of both of his parents. His dad is just a sports fanatic and, you know, played ball with him. Josh is a hockey player. He grew up in Connecticut where, you know, the winter extends 7 months. He started playing hockey when he was 5 years old. Mm. And so he loves sports and he loves entertainment. And he's just I'm so proud of him. I'm so proud of how balanced and grounded.
Right. What a good person this kid is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's him, Joan. Thank God there's a smattering of me and a lot of my husband.
No, but you know what? He's got your determination and...
Yeah.
And listen, you've always, I've got to tell everyone about Patti LuPone. A lot of people say she's tough, she's hard. She is fabulous. And she's one of the few human beings who tell the truth. A lot of people don't like the truth.
Well, you know, we need more truth, as I'm sure you will agree. We need a lot more truth in this country now. It's just, whatever. But you know what? To address she's hard, she's tough, I wasn't born that way. Life made me that way in survival. It's always about how whatever obstacles we face, and we can succumb to them, or we can, you know, face them head on and overcome them. And because I knew what my destiny was, I knew at 4 years old where I would be. My business is, as you know, Joan, is so difficult.
Ugh, impossible.
Especially for women.
Impossible.
Look at the women that are being shut down in the Senate. Let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
Women have a very difficult time. And I never actually thought about it as far as gender was concerned. I just thought I was affronted when somebody would shut me down or deny me something. And it's not that I felt entitled, but I didn't understand why.
Why, yeah. Why not?
Exactly. And so I've been made tough in order to survive my life and my business.
And you did. And who's working more than you? You don't have room on your shelf for any more Tonys.
Well.
It's okay. It's okay. And you know what? I'm like a witch. I'm telling you, you are always going to work.
Oh, thank you.
You are always going to work.
Thank you, my dear.
And we
From
are
your
going
mouth to Thespis's ears.
You know, the day I went to see you, Kate Burton was opening that night in her play.
Oh, right, right.
But that night, I mean, she had to be there at 4 or 5 o'clock. And she was sitting across from me in your play. It made me so nervous. I said, why are you doing this? She said, oh, it takes my mind off my opening. And then there was the day we were there, there was a little scenery issue.
Oh, yeah.
And it was late. So I had to walk across the aisle. I said, Kate, please leave. You're ruining this for me. And she would not leave. She said, I'm not missing Patty. I'm not missing Christine. My show will wait.
Oh, God bless her.
Anyway, she did it. So I'm excited for you. Are you commuting or are you in town?
I'm in town. I mean, I stay in town nights before matinees, but I do commute. And I commute and I occasionally run into the bear. Or both bears. Because we live in, you know, rural
Connecticut.
Yeah, and we have one I call Nadia because she's been tagged twice. Well, no, she's a girl. And she jumps up on the railing of our deck, like Nadia Comaneci in the balance
beam. That's perfect. Yeah.
And the other one is not tagged, and we call him Pokey because he's rather slow. But yeah, we've got bears. And, well, we've got a lot up there, but I go home because I want to wake up in green. It's
I
a real
know.
Level.
And breathe.
Me. Yeah.
Until you come into the city. Patti LuPone, one of America's greats.
Oh.
And it's true. You know, I have to tell the truth, too. Starring in War Paint at the Nederlander Theater, right on West 41st Street. For tickets, 877-250-2929. You are going to have the best time. And it's about a time when no women were doing things like that. And these two women, immigrants, came to this country and made a huge difference. And their stories are fabulous. And it makes you think, well, we've got to get our president to see it.
Oy.
Forgive me.
Oy.
Mea culpa. We'll ignore it. But it would do him. Think of it. It would be a great teaching lesson.
Well, okay.
The one and only Patti LuPone.
Thanks, Joan.
I'll see you soon. Regards. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I'm Joan Hamburg, and you're listening to WABC.
Your New York weekend is not complete without the Joan Hamburg Show on 77 WABC.
Stay tuned for hour 2 o'clock, and we're together until 3. But we want you to know this is the best of Joan Hamburg. These segments have been taped earlier. But also coming up, because we are talking to a lot of exciting guests, on October 7th, you're going to have a chance to hear Hillary Clinton, meet Rita Wilson, and share one of the most exciting new movies of the year with its director, Doug Liman. All this and more, so stay tuned.
New York culture with real New Yorkers. Joan Hamburg, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Every year when my favorite writer, one of the great intrigue international thrillers and thrilling writers, Daniel Silva, comes to visit, I say, I think this is your best book. But truthfully, House of Spies, which is probably, I stopped counting, 17, House of Spies is my most favorite book. It's the best book. Do you think it's your best book, Daniel?
I, I am very fond of it, very proud of it. I think it does a remarkable job of catching history in the act right now in terms of what's going on in the Middle East and with ISIS. I mean, it literally matches up almost perfectly if you go from the attacks in London to the destruction of the physical caliphate and
right.
There's a report today that al-Baghdadi has been killed. That is basically what's happening in my novel. It matches up perfectly, and it's a fun, entertaining way that I told this story. And so I'm very proud of the book. I have a couple others within the series that will always hold a special place for me. But I will say that while I was writing the novel, my wife kept saying over and over to me as she's reading the manuscript chapter, this is going to be your best book. And people have from my publishing house to interviews I've done to friends who read it, that it's my best book. And so I don't know why that is. As I said, there are a couple others that will in the series that will always have sentimental
and that are wonderful
value
to read.
Me. But I have heard over and over again that this is my best book, and that it happened at number 20 and number 17 of a long running series. I'm very pleased with the reaction that I've gotten thus far.
Well,
I mean the reviewer from the Huffington Post, a book reviewer there, who's read a great deal of my body of work, basically put it in print that I had topped myself with this.
But it's
novel.
True. Because, and when I was trying to think, why is this book so thrilling to me? I have to force myself to stop. It's like when you're eating cake and you want to just take a taste like you're supposed to, and you can't stop eating it. That's what I had to do. I had to force myself to stop it, because literally I would have read it in one sitting without stopping. It's because it's the real world in a way that we understand. It's happening all around us. There are people who are people of great honor and integrity, which we long for. In Daniel Silver's world.
And people of not great honor.
Exactly.
And not much integrity.
But they're the bad guys, and your guys go after them. And the ISIS people have faces and characters, and you really understand it's not just like a threat. It's got flesh and bones. And that's a gift, because there are lots of good writers, but not everyone fills out these people where we know them intimately. And you had new characters in this book.
Lots of new characters. I have two wonderful new characters in the novel. One is a French, I guess we would say that he's in the hospitality industry. His name is Jean-Luc Martel. He owns many hotels and restaurants and fine jewelry stores. And he's quite the man about town in Paris and in Saint-Tropez and in the south of France.
Yes.
But in reality, that is all a front and a money laundering operation for his real business, which is drugs. And Gabriel and his friends recruit Jean-Luc Martel as an agent, because Jean-Luc Martel, although he doesn't quite realize it, but Jean-Luc Martel is in business with ISIS. And what inspired the book was a phenomenon that was happening, has been happening in Europe for the last few years. There was a noticeable change in the way that hashish from Morocco was getting from the reef mountains of Morocco to the streets of Paris and Brussels and Amsterdam. And it used to come across from North Africa, very small batches on jet skis and across the ferries, or go overland around the Mediterranean and come the land route. And all of a sudden, after ISIS seized control of a hunk of the Libyan coast, huge shipments of hashish were coming across in cargo ships from Libya and coming into European ports and getting dispersed through in Europe that way. And European law enforcement came to the conclusion that there was a serious new player on the scene in the drug trade, and that player was quite probably ISIS. So I took that little kernel of a truth and spun it into House of Spies.
Right. And this very charming man who is secretly in the drug business.
Very charming.
Has a gorgeous girlfriend.
Who happens to be English. Her name is Olivia Watson.
Good name.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I worked on that one. Olivia is a retired fashion model. And she left the industry with some bad habits, let's say. Mm-hmm. She did not take care of her health when she was in the fashion industry, as many models don't. And she used a lot of drugs and spent all her money.
She needed a boyfriend.
She needed a man. She needed someone to keep her in the style in which she was accustomed. And she washed up in Saint-Tropez and started working in this little art gallery down there. And she met Jean-Luc Martel, who swept her off her feet. And they became a partners. And Jean-Luc Martel bought Olivia a beautiful art gallery and filled it with modern art. And she's a very successful art dealer. And what she does not know, or maybe what she doesn't want to know, is that art gallery that she runs in Saint-Tropez is part of a gigantic money laundering operation. And Gabriel and his team pull apart this relationship and play one against the other to get to their ultimate target, and that is Saladin, ISIS's terror mastermind.
And our main hero, Gabriel Alon, has now become the chief, speaking of chiefs, the highest job in Israel intelligence. Mm-hmm. And there's a fascinating look at what goes on in this community. I mean, you know, no one would imagine. I have to tell you something. I was taking a bus, and I had this dog-eared reader's copy, you know, pages folded down, and a lady taps me on the shoulder, and she says to me, "I'm so sorry to interrupt you. Were the twins born?" This is on a bus coming.
Which bus were you on?
New York, Madison Avenue, coming uptown. She said, "Were the twins born?" I said, "You don't know?" "No," she said.
Well, I want your listeners to know that you are riding the Madison Avenue bus. You are a New Yorker, young lady. Well, you are, you know what? I think that's the secret to the success of this series is that it deals with these issues. And yes, there's a lot of thrills and scary scenes and violence and all the rest. But it's ultimately, it's a very long running soap opera involving Gabriel Alon and the people around him. And his family and his battle to restore himself and those around him. And
that's what keeps it going.
That's what keeps it going.
Do you ever see that program Blue Blood on television?
I have
the
not.
The Tom Selleck. Well, it's cops, it's corruption, it's murders, it's New York. But the thing that holds everyone together and makes it theirs is the family dinner every single Sunday night when all this huge family gets together in Brooklyn.
Well, that's the secret
and they
to
eat.
All genre fiction, that whether it's crime or international thrillers or espionage fiction, it's got to be about people. And you're just writing about people in different modes.
Right. And they become your people.
Right.
And you become attached to them. That's why when I read in all the gossips that, House of Spies, but your series was going to become a television series. It's perfect. We always thought movies, because it's such a thrill. And we were looking for a new James Bond character that fits in this world.
And, you know, to be honest with you, Hollywood is looking for a new James Bond character. I mean, you have ties to the industry. You know that some of the challenges that the industry is facing right now. And when I published Black Widow last year, I was happily inundated
with offers.
Yes. As a result, I had numerous different visions of the project from which to choose. Mm-hmm. And one of the first decision I had to make was film versus television.
And that's a hard decision.
It was a hard decision. But in the end, you know, the way that we all have become addicted to lying in bed at night and binge watching these programs, and given the amount of material that I had available that I could give to a showrunner and give to a team of writers, I felt that television was the perfect fit for this material. And So that weeded out roughly two-thirds of the offers that I had. So I got, and MGM actually originally came to me with a film proposal, and we told them that we were going to go in a different direction. They said, no, not so fast. And then they came back, and we ended up doing the television deal with MGM Television. And you might or might not know this, but everyone right now is watching a wonderful MGM production called Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, you know
that, that is MGM Television.
I was going to say, I was trying to think, MGM Television, where is it? What is it?
It's the production company of MGM. So Handmaid's Tale on Hulu?
Yeah, which is so popular.
So popular right now. So those are the...
Well, that's where it's all at.
Yeah.
You know, which is exciting. And it has to be a series. When you think of Homeland, and we can't contain Gabriel in one thing.
Right. And I think that the ability to pull a character, and develop him or her separately, you know, as I explained it in one of the meetings I had with him, think of my books as a piece of music. And I played it one way, and you get to play it another way.
Exactly. Because you're the
conductor.
You get
to reinterpret it and adapt it and make the necessary alterations to fit this new format. I said it's rather like the song, you know, My Favorite Things. Exactly. It was one way in Sound of Music, and it was a whole different way when John Coltrane played it. And you get to do that a little bit.
What's the time frame?
They are working actually right now full speed ahead. My wife was actually sitting
working
in on some
on
meetings
it.
And working on it while I was getting ready for book tour, and they are really going for it.
Daniel, I could talk to you forever. House of Spies gave me pleasure. I wish you were doing two a year, but we can't be greedy. Congratulations. I look forward to the series. We'll talk when you get close. Thank you all for sharing, Mr. Silver. I'm Joan Hamburg, and this is WABC, House of Spies.
Stay healthy with the top health specialist in New York with Joan Hamburg, live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
All right, everyone, welcome to the Joan Hamburg Show. And you know that we often talk about entrepreneurship and how important it is. It, you know, when I was a kid growing up, people stayed in the same jobs for years. And then it started to change. People would say, well, as the world is changing, I'm going to do my own thing. And entrepreneurship became a major part of American economics. We're seeing it more and more now, even though there was a recent article saying that women are not as good at it as men, but not really so. I want you to meet an entrepreneur who I think many years ago when she was starting out in marketing and public relations and working in Spanish television and doing a million things, that she would end up running her own business called 16J Organics. And her name is Lourdes Liz. And Lourdes has always been passionate about health, about wellness, about using food in the right way, about our environment, so that her business was a natural progression from her passion. Even though, Lourdes, you came out, you ended up with an MBA out of the Kellogg School of Business and started doing a lot of interesting things and liked it, but health and wellness was still right there.
Yes. Thanks, Joan, for having me today. Yes, I when I graduated from Kellogg, I pursued a traditional career in entertainment marketing. But I always had this idea in the back of my mind that I wanted to have my own business. But I, as you said, I was passionate about health and wellness, and I started dabbling at home with some skincare products because I had really dry skin. At the moment that I was doing this, I didn't really think that was going to be my business. I had bigger ideas. I wanted to create an animated series, etc. But I was making these products for my skin, and my skin was loving it. And I just continued to tighten my formulation, and I would continue to do these products. 5 years ago, I ran out of Christmas gift ideas and I said, oh, I'm going to package my lotion and see what my friends think, see if they love it as much as I love it. And immediately when they received it, they were like, Lourdes, this is a product. Why aren't you thinking about this as your business? And that was the start.
But how did you even package it? In the early days?
Well, in the early days, it looked very different. Right now, all my packaging is in glass. Initially, I just went online and I bought
containers
and plastic bottles, which I wasn't really happy about. But what's happening now, though, and what's happened from the first moment I packaged the product to today is that there are so many sources now for materials online. So you can just Google glass bottles or any material that you might need and you will find it. So I think that helped a great deal. So, and I created my own packaging myself from my own training. I have a really good eye and I was able to do that all myself. In terms of the website also, I think the world has dramatically changed with e-commerce, with platforms such as Squarespace and Shopify. It makes it very easy as an entrepreneur, if you're making your own products, to make them available to a mass market.
But here, and I'm talking to Lourdes Liz, if you've just joined us, and Lourdes had a career, was doing fine in television and entertainment, even in nonprofits, using a lot of her skills and bilingual. It really came in handy, but her passion was wellness and with skincare, but you're not a chemist. So how did you even know in a very competitive line and field to put this together?
Well, I went back to the basics. My line is rooted on the simple fact that our skin is our largest organ and it absorbs a great deal. Some say about 60% of what we apply to our skin is absorbed into our bloodstream. So all my ingredients are raw, organic, food-grade, nutritionally dense ingredients. So I view it as if I'm making a meal. That's how I viewed it for myself. I have a product which is called Green Quench, which I call it's a green juice smoothie for the skin.
Uh-huh.
So I really went about creating something that I felt had the best ingredients. And truly, I was making it for my own skin. So I was the first guinea pig. And then my friends everyone used it. And they said, oh, my God, my skin really responds to this. And I think the only thing you need to be cautious about with my materials is just like when you're going out to a restaurant, are you allergic to any of the ingredients?
Uh-huh.
You can read, it's just like reading a menu. You will understand every ingredient. Every ingredient is a food, and you'll be able to decide, oh, I'm not allergic, so I can totally use this. But your skin will respond because it's all organic.
So as an entrepreneur starting a business,
yes,
how did you do this? Did you go to the banks for financing? Did you privately finance?
Once I had the product and my manufacturing, like I was able to figure out my bottle sourcing and my sources of all my raw materials, and I was able to figure out how I was going to make this in large quantities, my next step was to create an LLC, and I did that online. You know, I Googled, create an LLC, and so that's pretty easy to do. Then the next step was to open up a bank account once I got the LLC. So I went to Chase, and they're very helpful,
right?
Created it. And then once I had those two steps, I said, okay, I want to create a website. What do I need? And the key thing to a website are images, because you need to tell your story.
They have to look at it too.
And then you also need your product descriptions and your story. So I started documenting that, and I have friends. I have a good friend that's a photographer. My sister is also a photographer. So they helped me with the images. And then I built the site myself on Squarespace. They make it super easy. It took, most people say they can do it like within a day. It took me, realistically, it took me like a month. Because I'm not a tech-savvy person,
right,
and I had to learn it myself. But I encourage anyone out there that they can truly do it themselves.
Yeah, that's really interesting. But Ben, once you did it, once you had enough to put the product out there, how did you get people to know and want your product of all the other giants with massive
claims? Right. Well, I'm still in that journey because I just launched this business last fall.
Uh-huh.
So through social media, those are through my primary platforms and through my own personal email list, I've been getting the word out and communicating through friends. But what's amazing is that I have a lot of repeat customers. People really love the product and they're giving it away as gifts. So it's a slow start, but I feel that when you're starting a new business, you want to be able to work out your kinks and move at a good pace. And I think I'm really moving at a good pace.
Which is exciting. I know that we had ordered some, and my own daughter-in-law, who's the fussiest, unbelievable about her skin, is in love with the product. So you have to be willing, if you're an entrepreneur, if you have something you truly believe in, to hang in there. Now, what's the name mean, 16J?
Well, 16J is my apartment.
Right.
And it's kind of tongue-in-cheek because when I was giving away the products as gifts 5 years ago, I was doing it as a Christmas gift. And I said, oh, I'm going to call my product 16J Organics because they come from my apartment.
Right.
And then when I decided to launch the business, I kept the name because I thought it was like from my home to your home.
Yeah, good luck. So what are basically the range of products?
Well, I have the Green Quench, which is a body oil. And I also have a lip balm called Lip Rico. I have a body scrub called Scrubs. And then I have a body treatment product that is very rich. It's great for dry, cracked skin, which is called Mud Butter. So those are my four key products.
And those are good, and you'll push them. And for guys, today so many men have beards and everything like that. So it's not just a woman's thing.
No. Actually, my products, what's great about actually Green Quench as well as More Butter is that they're multitaskers. So I personally use them on my body, face, and hair. And I've heard men using Green Quench on their beards. So it's multiple use, which is really great.
Now, when you're an entrepreneur and you do what you're doing, what's the step next? Just the marketing, right?
Well, for me, after I launched with my website on Squarespace, I wanted to make my products available to a larger audience. So I also launched on Amazon. And Amazon has a great platform for entrepreneurs called Handmade at Amazon. So it's for anyone who's making their products themselves. And so I am part of that platform as well. And I recommend that to any entrepreneur who is making things themselves.
Right. And your business is still very new.
Yes.
So it's still in its here I am stage.
Yes. Yes. I call it my baby.
Right. Well, that's true. And you have to take baby steps to get to the next place.
Right. But I want to encourage anyone out there, any woman out there who's thinking about starting a business, not to be afraid and really start with small steps. Look at the product, examine, okay, is there a demand for this product? Work on your pricing, because I think that's critical too.
Yeah, important.
Because you want to know, how much can you charge for your product and can you make a profit? And then explore launching your own website. Look at Squarespace or Shopify or these other platforms. And Amazon is a great partner as well.
Because they really help.
Well, Amazon, not only do they have the great resources where they can help you as a seller how to get on board, but also their reach is massive. Mm-hmm. We don't know anyone who doesn't order anything from Amazon.
Right. And is most of the business not even necessarily yours alone, but people who are selling product or clothes or whatever online rather than retail?
Well, the shift, and this is the reason why I'm exclusively selling online right now, is that the shift is moving to e-commerce. That's where people are shopping, especially millennials are shopping everything online. Mm-hmm. Millennials are very big on Amazon as well. So it's a great platform as a startup. And the cost the costs are so minimal to start a website and to get on Amazon. So it's a great way to start a business. It's not like the olden days where you needed a store on the corner.
Right.
And that was a huge overhead to pay that monthly rent. We don't have that anymore.
Right. Most of it is online. 16J Organics. Take a look. Your website is
16jorganics.com. And for Joan listeners, I'm offering a special promotion if they a promo code is Joan, And it's good until July 9th, 15% off and free shipping.
Okay, but they're going to take a look. Thank you, Lourdes. All the best to you. Good luck. Looks
Thank
like
you.
A wonderful product line. We're all going to be more gorgeous than usual. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned. There's much more ahead on WABC.
Stay healthy with the top health specialist in New York with Joan Hamburg, live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
All right, everyone, welcome to the Joan Hamburg Show. And you know that we often talk about entrepreneurship and how important it is. It, you know, when I was a kid growing up, people stayed in the same jobs for years. And then it started to change. People would say, well, as the world is changing, I'm going to do my own thing. And entrepreneurship became a major part of American economics. We're seeing it more and more now, even though there was a recent article saying that women are not as good at it as men, but not really so. I want you to meet an entrepreneur who I think many years ago when she was starting out in marketing and public relations and working in Spanish television and doing a million things, that she would end up running her own business called 16J Organics. And her name is Lourdes Liz. And Lourdes has always been passionate about health, about wellness, about using food in the right way, about our environment, so that her business was a natural progression from her passion. Even though, Lourdes, you came out, you ended up with an MBA out of the Kellogg School of Business and started doing a lot of interesting things and liked it, but health and wellness was still right there.
Yes. Thanks, Joan, for having me today. Yes, when I graduated from Kellogg, I pursued a traditional career in entertainment marketing. But I always had this idea in the back of my mind that I wanted to have my own business. But I, as you said, I was passionate about health and wellness, and I started dabbling at home with some skincare products because I had really dry skin. At the moment that I was doing this, I didn't really think that was going to be my business. I had bigger ideas. I wanted to create an animated series, etc. But I was making these products for my skin and my skin was loving it. And I just continued to tighten my formulation and I would continue to do these products. 5 years ago, I ran out of Christmas gift ideas and I said, oh, I'm going to package my lotion and see what my friends think, and see if they love it as much as I love it. And immediately when they received it, they were like, Lourdes, this is a product. Why aren't you thinking about this as your business? And that was the start.
But how did you even package it? In the early days?
Well, in the early days, it looked very different. Right now, all my packaging is in glass. Initially, I just went online and I bought
containers
and plastic bottles, which I wasn't really happy about. But what's happening now, though, and what's happened from the first moment I packaged the product to today is that there's so many sources now for materials online. So you can just Google glass bottles or any material that you might need and you will find it. So I think that helped a great deal. So, and I created my own packaging myself from my own training. I have a really good eye and I was able to do that all myself. In terms of the website also, I think the world has dramatically changed with e-commerce, like with platforms such as Squarespace and Shopify. It makes it very easy as an entrepreneur, if you're making your own products, to make them available to a mass market.
But here, and I'm talking to Lourdes Liz, if you've just joined us, and Lourdes had a career, was doing fine in television and entertainment, even in nonprofits, using a lot of her skills and bilingual. It really came in handy, but her passion was wellness and was skincare. But you're not a chemist. So how did you even know in a very competitive line and field to put this together?
Well, I went back to the basics. My line is rooted on the simple fact that our skin is our largest organ, and it absorbs a great deal. Some say about 60% of what we apply to our skin is absorbed into our bloodstream. So all my ingredients are raw, organic, food grade, nutritionally dense ingredients. So I view it as if I'm making a meal. That's how I viewed it for myself. It's I have a product which is called Green Quench, which I call it's a green juice smoothie for the skin. So I really went about creating something that I felt had the best ingredients. And truly, I was making it for my own skin. So I was the first guinea pig. And then my friends
everyone used it.
And they said, oh, my God, my skin really responds to this. And I think the only thing you need to be cautious about with my materials is just like when you're going out to a restaurant, are you allergic to any of the ingredients? You can it's just like reading a menu. You will understand every ingredient. Every ingredient is a food, and you'll be able to decide, oh, I'm not allergic, so I can totally use this. But your skin will respond because it's all organic.
So as an entrepreneur starting a business,
yes,
how did you do this? Did you go to the banks for financing? Did you privately finance?
Once I had the product and my manufacturing, like I was able to figure out my bottle sourcing and my sources of all my raw materials, and I was able to figure out how I was going to make this in large quantities, my next step was to create an LLC, and I did that online. You know, I Googled, create an LLC, and so that's pretty easy to do. Then the next step was to open up a bank account once I got the LLC. So I went to Chase, and they're very helpful,
right?
Created it. And then once I had those two steps, I said, okay, I want to create a website. What do I need? And the key thing to a website are images, because you need to tell your story.
They have to look at it too.
And then you also need your product descriptions and your story. So I started documenting that, and I have friends. I have a good friend that's a photographer. My sister is also a photographer. So they helped me with the images. And then I built the site myself on Squarespace. They make it super easy. It took, most people say they can do it like within a day. It took me, realistically, it took me like a month. Because I'm not a tech savvy person, right, and I had to learn it myself. But I encourage anyone out there that they can truly do it themselves.
Yeah, that's really interesting. But Ben, once you did it, once you had enough to put the product out there, how did you get people to know and want your product of all the other giants with massive
claims? Right. Well, I'm still in that journey because I just launched this business last fall. So through social media, those are my primary platforms, and through my own personal email list, I've been getting the word out and communicating through friends. But what's amazing is that I have a lot of repeat customers. People really love the product and they're giving it away as gifts. So it's a slow start, but I feel that when you're starting a new business, you want to be able to work out your kinks and move at a good pace. And I think I'm really moving at a good pace.
Which is exciting.
Yes.
I know that we had ordered some, and my own daughter-in-law, who's the fussiest, unbelievable about her skin, is in love with the product. So you have to be willing, if you're an entrepreneur, if you have something you truly believe in, to hang in there. Now, what's the name mean, 16J?
Well, 16J is my apartment.
Right.
And it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, because when I was giving away the products as gifts 5 years ago, I was doing it as a Christmas gift, and I said, oh, I'm going to call my products 16J Organics because they come from my apartment.
Right.
And then when I decided to launch the business, I kept the name because I thought it was like
good
from
luck.
My home to your home.
Yeah, good luck. So what are basically the range of products?
Well, I have the Green Quench, which is a body oil. And I also have a lip balm called Lip Rico. I have a body scrub called Scrubs. And then I have a body treatment product that is very rich. It's great for dry, cracked skin, which is called My Butter. So those are my four key products.
And those are good, and you'll push them. And for guys, today so many men have beards and everything like that. So it's not just a woman's thing.
No, actually my products, what's great about actually Green Quench, as well as More Butter, is that they're multitaskers. So I personally use them on my body, face, and hair. And I've heard men using Green Quench on their beards. So it's multiple use, which is really great.
Now, when you're an entrepreneur and you do what you're doing, what's the step next? Just the marketing, right?
Well, for me, after I launched with my website on Squarespace, I wanted to make my products available to a larger audience. So I also launched on Amazon. And Amazon has a great platform for entrepreneurs called Handmade at Amazon. So it's for anyone who's making their products themselves. And so I am part of that platform as well. And I recommend that to any entrepreneur who is making things themselves.
Right. And your business is still very new.
Yes.
So it's still in its here I am stage.
Yes. Yes. I call it my baby.
Right. Well, that's true. And you have to take baby steps to get to the next place.
Right. But I want to encourage anyone out there, any woman out there who's thinking about starting a business, not to be afraid and really start with small steps. Look at the product, examine, okay, is there a demand for this product? Work on your pricing, because I think that's critical too.
Yeah, important.
Because you want to know, how much can you charge for your product and can you make a profit? And then explore launching your own website. Look at Squarespace or Shopify or these other platforms. And Amazon is a great partner as well.
Because they really help.
Well, Amazon, not only do they have the great resources where they can help you as a seller how to get on board, but also their reach is massive. Mm-hmm. We don't know anyone who doesn't order anything from Amazon.
Right. And is most of the business not even necessarily yours alone, but people who are selling product or clothes or whatever online rather than retail?
Well, the shift, and this is the reason why I'm exclusively selling online right now, is that the shift is moving to e-commerce. That's where people are shopping, especially millennials are shopping everything online. Mm-hmm. Millennials are very big on Amazon as well. So it's a great platform as a startup. And the cost to, the costs are so minimal to start a website and to get on Amazon. So it's a great way to start a business. It's not like the olden days where you needed a store on the corner.
Right.
And that was a huge overhead to pay that monthly rent. We don't have that anymore.
Right. Most of it is online. 16J Organics. Take a look. Your website is
16jorganics.com. And for Joan listeners, I'm offering a special promotion if a promo code is Joan, and it's good until July 9th, 15% off and free shipping.
Okay, but they're going to take a look. Thank you, Lourdes. All the best to you. Good luck. It looks
Thank you.
A wonderful product line. We're all going to be more gorgeous than usual. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned. There's much more ahead on WABC.